This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
If it doesn't tell you how good that interview was yesterday, Max, I mean, we're going to spend about like 45 minutes talking about a 5-minute clip from Joe Theismann and Robert Griffin III with JP yesterday. Fantastic interview. Go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. B. Mitch and Finley, JP Finley talking with Robert Griffin III and Joe Theismann yesterday. Great, great content over at Army Navy Media Row. Last clip I want to play, though, and I think this one talks to the difference in this organization this year and why you're seeing success on the field this year compared to other years. It's just night and day. The difference in what this team has built is just so different than anything I've seen in my lifetime. And I think it's why you're seeing success that this team hasn't had in a long, long time. So here's RG3 talking about the importance of organizational structure and talking about what you're seeing in Chicago with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, and JP, that's the one thing that I tried to stress with everybody about Chicago. It's the structure, man. One player does not make a team. I did not make the team in 2012. It wasn't about me. It was about Alfred Morris.
Sure.
It was about Trent Williams. It was about Pierre Garçon, Josh Morgan, Brandon Banks. You know, it was about our defense being opportunistic in that year, late down the stretch and getting
turnovers.
When
you guys got hot.
When we got hot, the defense was getting the team to turn the ball over. But Jaden comes in with a structure that is solidified, and they get to grow together.
Sure.
That, to me, was always the most important thing.
Dude, you think about what the structure when you came in was not solidified.
No, it was
a different
chaotic.
Era.
It was chaotic.
And it only grew worse.
More chaotic,
almost.
Yes.
Which is interesting. Night and day now. It's shockingly different over there.
And you guys are different, too. I'm not going to lie. Like, the vibe around the team is so much exciting and so different because there's no dark cloud around the team.
And, you know, the dark cloud being Dan Snyder. Thankfully, the dark cloud has gone out of D.C. But I think it shows you how different things are. Because think about this. I don't know if Jaden gets drafted to Chicago, just in a hypothetical here, how different is it? I think Jaden was more pro-ready. I didn't necessarily believe that at the time. It's obvious now. But if he were to get drafted in Chicago, think about what Caleb's going to have to go through by the time he gets to his second year. His second year. Not his third, not his fourth, not his fifth. His second year. He's already been on his second play caller. He's already been on his second head coach. Is he going to have a new play caller and is a third different play caller in 2 years? Is that what's going to happen? Because is Thomas Brown going to get hired? Is he sticking around? So the reality is, you've set him up for a bad spot. He's already going to be on his potentially third head coach. So how many guys are going to succeed there? And by the way, too, this goes back to what Adam Peters in Washington has done a heck of a job of doing. If you just look at what has happened and transpired in the locker room since they decided to move on from Fields and go with Caleb Williams, it was obvious that there was going to be some problems. DJ Moore went and sat down on the bench in the middle of a play and somehow is still just going out there as if there was no issue there. I know we tweaked something. He could have tried to stay in bounds. I know he stepped out of bounds, so he's ineligible. So he just went and sat down because he tweaked his ankle. He didn't even fight to stay in bounds to give his quarterback a chance. And by the way, anytime you draft a quarterback like Caleb Williams, you know that play's not over until the ball has officially hit the ground or in someone's hands. That's what he does. That's what he lives off of. What if Tyreek Hill with Patrick Mahomes in his first year starting just went and sat down on the bench in the middle of a play because he still wanted Alex Smith? Come on, man. DJ Moore wanted Justin Fields to stay, which, by the way, it doesn't speak highly for DJ Moore if you wanted Justin Fields, a guy that got benched for Russell Wilson at this point in his career, which credit to Russ, he's been playing really, really well this year. But, I mean, come on. You're going to go sit down in the middle of a play? Keenan Allen saying stuff, and he's supposed to be the veteran leader, and he's over here getting 15-yard penalties because he's getting his helmet ripped off. And look, I get that that probably should have been a penalty, but he's not being a great veteran leader. You haven't seen anything out of Adunze this year, it feels like, and I was really high on him coming out of the draft. But they haven't helped him at all. They haven't given Caleb a chance at all. He's going to be on his third play caller. He's going to be on his third head coach by the time he starts his second season. Not at the end of his second season, by the time he starts his second season. By the way, this is the Chicago way, right? Where they have a general manager, they draft a quarterback, but the quarterback is getting drafted to a head coach. It's already on shaky ground. Then inevitably they fire the head coach, they bring in a new head coach who didn't draft the quarterback, so he's not fully invested in the quarterback, and then that doesn't work, so then he gets on shaky ground because he moves on from the quarterback, so then they draft another quarterback. Same carousel every single time in Chicago where it's just over and over. You want to find the worst way to bring a rookie quarterback into the league? Look at Chicago. They do it consistently. They've done it with Trubisky. They've done it with Justin Fields. They're doing it again with Caleb Williams. It's why it was, by the way, this to me is why it was dumb for Ryan Poles. And I don't think he's a good GM. So many people think he is. I don't think he is. But so many people love him. And this is why I thought it was stupid to keep Eberflus. You knew Eberflus wasn't staying long term. He was already on shaky ground. And since you're starting with a rookie quarterback, why would you not move on? This is a credit to what they've done here in Washington. We could bash Chicago all day. I mean, heck, it's fun, but it's a waste of our time because they do it themselves. They do it to themselves. When you look at Washington, though, it's a credit to what they've done where they've built a respectable, well-run organization, which, again, I mean, heck, we haven't been able to say that in my lifetime, where they've got the right structure. The ownership is not causing an issue. Like you talked about RG3 in his rookie year. You don't have the dynamic of undermining where RG3 can say what he wants. RG3 was buddy-buddy with Dan, right? Like, so he was undermining the authority of everybody in the building by being buddy-buddy with the owner. I'm not saying you can't have a relationship. Obviously, the owner's writing your paycheck, and you're the biggest name in the organization, the biggest, you're the face of the franchise. You're going to have a relationship. It's not like Jaden's never talked to Josh Harris. But it's not like they're buddy-buddy like RG3 and Dan were. But that's not a good organizational structure. It's just not. What they've built here now is you've got an ownership that is, they're involved, but they're not overly involved. They give Adam Peters the keys to run the franchise. Adam Peters builds a team that he thinks is fit for Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt to run. And then Dan Quinn has done a good job of motivating the guys, and then the respective coordinators, specifically on the offensive side with Cliff, has done a great job of putting the guys in position to succeed. And to me, this is where you find good coaching, and this is why I didn't believe that the Cliff was going to fully happen here. We saw a little glimpse of it where things started to fall off a little bit, but I didn't think we were going to see it here because I think you've got so many guys around Cliff, too, to help him out. But he's done such a good job of putting Jaden in a spot to succeed and letting Jaden do his thing. Because that's really what you've got to do as coaches. You can only do so much. You're not out there throwing the football. You're not out there blocking. You're not out there catching the football. You're not out there running the football. The players are going to ultimately decide the game. But you need to be able to put those guys in the position to succeed. And they've done a heck of a job of doing that this year. Cliff has put Jaden in a spot where Jaden is comfortable. Jaden can make the decisions. And by the way, too, they put a lot on Jaden's plate. A lot on his plate. Maybe not the typical stuff that you would think of with a quarterback, where maybe his reads aren't incredibly difficult. Maybe the route concepts aren't incredibly difficult and complex. Maybe he doesn't have to read down the field and the coverages and some of this stuff as much as when you think, you know, Peyton Manning and the control he had and all the stuff that was on his plate. Maybe he doesn't have that. But Peyton didn't have to do some of the stuff that Jaden is doing at the line of scrimmage, where Peyton couldn't run, obviously. So he's never running read options. But Jaden on every single play has to make a decision. You know, think about back to Peyton Manning's time frame. Let's say they ran 70 plays in a game, and they were pretty pass happy. So let's say they passed the ball 45 times. When Peyton would sit there. He'd pass the ball for 45 plays. He's got to think about it. He's got to go through his reads. He's got to do all that. That means 25 plays, the run plays. He's got to make sure they're running it to the correct side and into the correct look. And then he just hands the ball off. He doesn't have to think about it. He just hands the ball off. Versus with Jaden, if there's 70 plays in a football game and say they're 35-35, he's got to think during the passing plays, right? He obviously, as a quarterback, you got to think through what you're looking at. He has to think on the run plays because every single one of these Brian Robinson runs up the middle is also a potential read option. Every one of these run plays up the middle is also a potential RPO to a slant to Terry behind, a potential hitch on the outside to Luke McCaffrey. Every single play, Jaden has to be dialed in. And that's something that a lot of quarterbacks don't do in this league, frankly. You know, there are certain ones that can, but you got to give credit to Jaden that his decision-making has been so good. And watch tomorrow. When he makes a simple handoff, you want to know what, you know, whether it's a read or not. If he's eyeing the defensive end, it's a read. If he's just staring at the defensive end, it's a read. Or if he's staring at a linebacker, he's watching to see if he wants to pull it and make a throw for an RPO. He's doing it on every one. Almost every single run play is an RPO, specifically out of the shotgun or the pistol. You know, maybe not from under center, which they don't do tons of, but it is crazy how much they have on his plate and he still succeeds. Maybe it's a little different of what's on his plate, but so much is riding on Jaden. And by the way, he can handle it. And so that's good coaching, understanding that he can't handle it and putting stuff that he can handle on his plate, even as a rookie. Great coaching, a great front office, and great ownership. It's good organizational structure. It's something that hasn't been here in so long. And seeing another franchise that has had the quarterback bugaboo for really their entire existence and the Chicago Bears continue to do it. And Washington, who's maybe been the second most snake-bitten team in terms of quarterback success, is seemingly starting to get it figured out. It's refreshing, and it's nice to see. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll take a quick look at some of the players I want to watch in this game tomorrow. We'll continue talking about the Commanders and the Saints and dive a little deeper into that game. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Just a couple minutes before we get to the 2 o'clock hour. So we'll get more into the Commanders Saints game in the 2 o'clock hour. But I know you're a big fan of Fanatics, Max.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I love them.
They made an awesome move the other day.
They did.
I got to give them credit.
They did something right for a change. Credit to them.
They did something really, really cool. I'm a big jersey collecting guy. Matter of fact, if I look up how many I have, I don't know that I've ever divulged this on air. I have a spreadsheet on my Google Sheets. I'm trying to see. I have 146 total. I think that's updated.
Damn.
Now, you know, a lot of these are from, you know, I'm a kid and I still have a lot that I can wear, but, you know, I have like Clinton Portis and Santana Moss from when I was a kid or LeVar Arrington or something like that. I have, you know, a lot of jerseys that don't fit anymore, but I still have them. 146 of them. Well, there's this guy. If you've been on Twitter, there's a guy, I think he goes to Nebraska and he goes to the University of Nebraska and some dude just started tweeting about in one of these classes, I think it was like a geography class.
Yeah.
This dude sits in one of the back rows and this guy kept showing up to class in random obscure jerseys. I mean, we're talking like, let me look up a couple of these because they're good.
I want to pull up the thread right now because there are some deep, deep pulls on
so,
here.
You know, we're talking like Steve Largent Seahawks jerseys. We're talking...
Got a Paul Konerko.
Yeah, Paul Konerko. We got a throwback, a different LeBron jersey. We've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba. We've got Magic Johnson.
Freddie Garcia.
Aaron Judge. Karl Malone. Nick Van Exel is who I was trying to think of. I mean, just incredible jersey collection. And so this guy's rocking them all the time. And this guy sitting in the back row is always tweeting about it, saying, you know, specifically his tweet is, so-and-so jersey at 9:30 geography? You bet. And basically made it a thread. People were always following this guy's tweets, wondering, what is this jersey guy going to wear today? And it was something that was always cool because it was just so random. You know, it wasn't a specific team always. It wasn't even just a specific era always. You got throwbacks, you got modern. Well, Fanatics did a really cool thing where they understood that this guy has kind of gotten a little bit of a cult following on Twitter, and Fanatics dropped off, I believe, 60-some jerseys for this guy that he can wear to classes now, and this guy could tweet about. I mean, you're looking at a huge pile of jerseys up front. It looks like he's holding up a Connor Bedard jersey for Chicago. Looks like there's a Pirates jersey in there. Maybe that's a Paul Skeens jersey. Looks like there's a Brewers logo in there. Looks like you've got some football jerseys in there. Maybe a Bengals jersey. I mean, it is so cool that they hook this guy up. I love that. I'm a jersey collector myself. I wish I could somehow manage to get that many jerseys just randomly dropped off for me. But how cool is that, Max? You just get that huge shipment, and it was a big surprise to him. He just shows up at his regular seat in class, and all of a sudden, you've got a huge addition to your jersey collection.
It's really sick. Shout out Fanatics, man. They did something right for once.
Yeah, that was really cool. So whatever I got to do, Fanatics, just send 60 jerseys my way. Specifically, keep them DC sports related. Which, by the way, if you can get me a James Wood or Dylan Cruz Nationals jersey, even better, because I don't know how long they'll be here, and I don't want to pay $150 or whatever for a jersey that might only be useful for so long. And by the way, Max, like, I have to buy a current jersey because I can't wear Soto to the park anymore.
Yeah.
Can I? Like,
no, you can't, especially with the it hurt me so much.
Not with the Mets, I can't.
I was going to say, yeah, it hurt me so much that he went to the Mets. And now the NL East is just full of former national stars.
Yeah, it's annoying. It's quite annoying. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive into this matchup between the Saints and the Commanders. Also want to get into some college football discussion with the Army-Navy game coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk about all that coming up next. You're listening to Toby Altizer on Overtime on The Fan. All-time banger. Listening to Overtime on The Fan, also the Team 980. Toby Altizer with you until 3:30. I'll continue here on The Fan until 3:30. On the Team 980, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll turn it over to Hoyas basketball as they take on Syracuse today. So you can listen to the Hoyas as they take on the Syracuse Orange today over on the Team 980. But I want to take a look at some players to watch for the Commanders this week. Also want to dive into some of the injuries that are starting to pile up for the Commanders. We got a couple injury updates, and we'll get into those. But John Allen's an interesting name that we saw pop up yesterday with John Kimes saying he could potentially return. Noah Brown, done for the year. And we get a debut on Sunday of Marshawn Lattimore finally debuting against his former team. So plenty of stuff to get into there. But the number one dude I'm watching tomorrow, because I'm intrigued about this, Benjamin St. Juice. What are we doing? You know, we've had this discussion plenty. It was the big discussion when Marshawn Lattimore was acquired. It was a discussion when we thought maybe Lattimore could come back against the Titans. And now it's a discussion as you finally got the good to go for Sunday for Marshawn Lattimore. Who's the other corner outside? Because is it going to be just BSJ and you kick Samra still back into the slots? Or are you going to send BSJ to the bench and leave Samra still outside? I'm watching Benjamin St. Juice. Because the other thing, too, is let's see what happens whether he's on the field. But say they kick Samra still back into the nickel position and then they have Benjamin St. Juice outside. I've been told, and I'm not a subscriber to this, by the way, but I've been told by plenty of people on these airwaves, by fans, on Twitter, plenty of people said, you know, Benjamin St. Juice, he's not that bad. He's just a number two corner having to cover number ones. Okay, fine. Well, let's see him cover number twos and see how he does. By the way, Max, you can help me with this. Is Mike Williams a number one receiver at this point in his career?
No.
Did he score a touchdown in a big spot on Benjamin St. Juice? I'm trying to remember.
I can't. I think I may have expunged that memory from my brain, but maybe?
I think he did. And if I recall correctly, old Mike Williams, that wasn't good enough for the Jets, was given 10 yards of cushion and somehow still ran by Benjamin St. Juice. I don't know, man. I don't think BSJ is... I think he's better than he's played at times, but at the same point, like I've talked about before with the cornerback position, it's a brutal position. It's one of the toughest to play in all of sports. I mean, just think about what you're being asked to do. Take one of the most skilled people in terms of movement, laterally, going in and out. Think about playing tag with the shiftiest person you know when you were a kid, and you have to stay with this guy for 4 straight seconds or longer, depending upon what the quarterback does. You have to literally mirror this guy. Corner's hard, man. Corner is so hard. And the reason it's even harder is, say we take that same number of snaps that we had earlier. We say 70 snaps in a football game for an offense, all right? Say we have that many snaps. Say we make 40 of them pass plays. What if you play, Max, what if you play 36 good snaps of football in pass coverage? But on those 4 snaps that you didn't, you give up 4 catches, 130 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Did you have a good game?
Those are the only snaps people will remember, so no.
Well, I don't even care if it's the only snaps you remember. You didn't have a good game.
Yeah.
You didn't. The corner position sucks. Let's just be real. Would Darryl Green be a Hall of Famer if he played good snaps 95% of the time, but the other 5% he was giving up 80-yard bombs? No. That's the nature of the corner position. It sucks. You have to be good every single snap. And, you know, you might make one mistake and it costs you the game. It stinks. It's also what you sign up for. That's what happens when you play corner. And so you can say, well, but Benjamin St. Juice is better than you think. I don't care that he's good for 35 of the 40 passing plays. I need him to be good for 40 of them. Yeah, that's a tough standard to live up to. But I can't have you. And the other part that really, really hampers Benjamin St. Juice is those 5 or 6 bad plays always seem to happen in the final 2 minutes of the game in a critical spot on third down, right? It's always, it's whether it's a pass interference or giving up a big spot. We don't need to argue about BSJ. We've done that plenty. Some people are going to be on his side. Not many are on his side, which, by the way, I don't know. Linnell was talking about this a couple of weeks ago. Credit to my guy, Linnell. He had like 4 or 5 callers call in to defend BSJ. I don't know where he found those guys because I can't find many of them. So credit to him for finding a couple of BSJ truthers to call in and say that he's still better. But I don't know, man. I think BSJ needs to go to the bench. That's something I'm watching tomorrow, though. Lattimore's back in the lineup. What are you going to do? I would leave Sanders still outside. I would send BSJ to the bench. Another name that I'm watching tomorrow is Luke McCaffrey. That's probably the big name to watch tomorrow. Who's stepping up with Noah Brown essentially done for the season? Who's stepping up? Someone's going to have to make some plays. Someone's going to have to fill that role. And Noah Brown's a heck of a player. You know, he's not a true number two. But one thing he brings really, really to this offense is his blocking ability. I don't know that they're going to be able to replace that, but who's going to step up in the receiving game? Because you're losing the guy that Jaden threw the ball to quite a bit. You know, you've still got Ertz and you've still got Terry, which, by the way, if this just means Terry gets more targets, sign me up. If this just means Terry gets 2 or 3 more targets a game, perfect. I hate that it had to come to that, but perfect. Give Terry all the targets he can handle. But I'm excited to see what Luke McCaffrey does, because a lot of these analytics people at PFF, a lot of people that are big Luke McCaffrey truthers have been saying, this dude's always open according to his separation score. Why is he never getting the football? Go his way. Throw it to Luke. Feed Luke. Well, here's your chance, because who else is stepping up? Olamide Zaccheaus? We haven't really seen him since early in the season, it feels like. Deami Brown? Maybe we see Deami step up into a bigger role. But I think Luke McCaffrey's got a real chance now, with Noah Brown done for the year, to step into that role. So I'm really intrigued about that. I want to dive into some of these injuries. How does the Noah Brown injury change things? Could John Allen return? What do we expect to see out of Marshon Lattimore? We'll do that next, right here on The Fan. But on the Team 980, coming up in just a couple of minutes, Syracuse takes on Georgetown. You can hear that game over on the Team 980. We'll turn it over to them next. Right here on The Fan, we'll continue breaking down the Saints and Commanders game coming up tomorrow. Welcome back. It is overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 3:30. some injuries for this team. I think it's interesting. You're getting you're for sure getting one guy back in Marshawn Lattimore. I want to talk about that. You're potentially, John Keim reporting yesterday, you could potentially get back John Allen. Maybe at the end of this month. That's intriguing. And you're going to be without Noah Brown likely for the rest of the season. So let's start with the bad news and we'll work our way to the good news. Noah Brown being out is huge for this offense because they don't have a second guy, it feels like. We were just talking about some guys to watch out for tomorrow, Luke McCaffrey being a big one. Like, who steps up in his absence? Is it Diami? We've seen him involved a little bit, but it's been more so those tunnel screens, and I think he's done a good job on some of those. Are we going to see him more involved? Is Olamide Zaccheaus play a bigger role? Heck, the discussion yesterday was, are they going to go get Odell Beckham? I don't know what the answer is, because right now, you look at this team, Terry McLaurin has 61 receptions. Zach Ertz has 52. Noah Brown has 35. I don't know, man. 35 and 33 of those, 33 to Austin Eckler, both those guys are gone. Two of your top four guys in receptions are gone. Your next dude would be Olamide Zaccheaus, then Diami Brown. Luke McCaffrey's at 16. I don't know. Who do you think steps up, Max? Like, I don't love the group of receivers, and this is something that we talked about, by the way, where, you know, if you don't feel great about what they've got in terms of a group of players right now, imagine if they had an injury, and Unfortunately they got one with Noah Brown now.
Yeah, it's tough. I am a part of the team of McCaffrey Hive that you mentioned, so I'm really hoping that he
Hold on. Mm-hmm. Are you a part of the McCaffrey Hive, or are you a part of, I'm going to bet Luke McCaffrey to score a touchdown until he actually scores one?
Hey, I think both of those are I find myself in both those camps.
Yeah, it's a tough question, right? I mean, I don't know who the answer is.
It's OZ, Sinnott. One of these rookies is going to have to step up, or somebody who's just way down the depth chart. And it's
You're going to need more out of Zach Ertz.
Yeah.
Like, hey, catch the ball and actually run now instead of just falling immediately. They're going to have somebody step up. And this, too, we can have a little bit of a discussion about Odell Beckham here. You know, I don't know how a lot of fans feel. Some people scoff at the idea. Some people want him. Linnell was talking about it last night. I was driving home listening to him talk about it, saying, you know, I don't think Odell's going to be an issue in the locker room. I don't believe any, you know, a lot of people say he's a diva and this and that. I think the reason a lot of people feel that way is his celebrity is still large. His on-field production is not.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a problem. I didn't feel like I heard problems in Baltimore last year. I didn't really hear any problems in Miami. It is what it is. He's still a bigger celebrity at this point than he is actually a good football player on the field. But to me, that doesn't matter. I don't know that he's going to disrupt the chemistry in that locker room. I don't know that I bring him in because I seriously don't think he makes the biggest impact. But at the same point, would you rather have Odell Beckham Jr. at this point in his career, taking away the name recognition and all that, but the actual football player, would you rather have OBJ or Olamide Zaccheaus? Probably OBJ, right? Would you rather have OBJ or Diami Brown? Probably OBJ. Would you rather have OBJ or Luke McCaffrey at this point in their careers? I think that's a toss-up as well. And so I wouldn't blame them if they kick the tires there. They need somebody. They absolutely need somebody, and it's not something now where you can go out there and make a move. I'm curious to see how much K.J. Osborne gets involved because I actually think K.J. Osborne could be a solid receiver for them. I think he could be maybe a piece that was missing in terms of another. I think Noah Brown gave you a lot as that blocking, big-bodied wide receiver. I don't know that they had a guy that they felt could get open as often outside of Terry, right? I think K.J. Osborne can give you a little bit of that. He's a smaller, shiftier guy if you want to play in the slot or outside, whatever. But I'm curious to see how involved he is. I don't know that that's a this week thing. You know, G and D were talking about that a little bit earlier this week. Is he even going to get a catch? I don't know if he's active tomorrow or not. I don't know what it's going to be. You're kind of putting a lot on this guy to get out there in week one in the organization. But the other thing, too, that's interesting is How hard is it to learn this offense when a lot of it is hand signals and communication at the line of scrimmage with the amount of no huddle they run? I don't know. Maybe there's a package of plays where he gets involved. Maybe he learns a couple of different things, but I'm curious to see what he can do. Maybe he's your answer long term in terms of who's going to fill in for Noah Brown, but they really got to figure out something there. Otherwise, they're going to have to lean even more heavily on that run game, and maybe you just lean heavier on Terry McLaurin, which I don't think is a bad option as well. So that's going to be an intriguing thing to watch tomorrow and going forward for the rest of the season. Noah Brown's done, which it sounds like he is. And by the way, brutal injury for him.
Kidney injury?
It's one
that's
thing
horrible.
If you... It's one thing if, like, you injure a bone or something, like, you know what that injury is, and, you know, football players playing their entire lives have gone through various injuries with their shoulder, a knee, you know, a foot, whatever it is. That happens all the time. A kidney injury? I mean, what are we talking about here? Is like a lacerated kidney? That's horrible. Well, anytime you get one of those internal organs messed up, it's scary. So hopefully Noah Brown's able to be okay, and I think he's someone that should be back next year to help out this football team. But Noah Brown's likely done for the season. The encouraging news that we got yesterday, I don't know how a lot of fans feel about this, but John Allen potentially could come back. John Keim reported this yesterday that John Allen could maybe return by the end of the year, coming back from a torn pec that he suffered in week 6 against the Ravens. That's a speedy recovery for a torn pec. I mean, you understand how important the pec muscle is, especially for someone that's going to play on the line and have to be able to move dudes and do stuff like that. That's tough. That's a quick timeline to get back, because you got to think too, not only do you have to be able to trust that pec, you got to have the strength to be able to go against offensive linemen trying to blow you up play after play after play and be able to hold on with that pec. I'm intrigued to see there. They're not going to put him in any danger. You know, if he's back out on the football field, you can know that he's good to go and he's going to be all right. I also don't know if they need him back. I think he'd be an upgrade over the depth defensive tackles. But I don't know that this defensive line got worse when he went down. Is that crazy to say? Like, I don't think the interior of the line somehow went from good to bad. I think it kind of went from bad to staying bad. It didn't go from bad to worse, but it's not like he's going to be he can help in terms of giving you depth. I don't think he needs to step right back into the starting lineup, and maybe that's where they would have him come out and play 15 snaps a game down the stretch. I think even if he is able to return, I don't think you're having him play a full complement of snaps. I think you have him working in certain packages, different situations, you know, whether you feel better about him or Johnny Newton in a pass rush game, or you want him in to run stuff, whatever it may be. I think you can kind of work your situations there. I don't think he plays the full complement, but I don't know, man. You want him back, but at the same point too, is this his last year in DC? Do you want him to come back and then somehow make it worse, and then maybe you're not able to move on from him in the offseason as easily? I don't know what the play is there. I'm curious, because you want to win this season, but I don't know how much of an impact John Allen makes to truly change your trajectory. I don't know that he does, to be honest. So I'm kind of indifferent. If he returns, fine, great. If he doesn't play, we're in the same spot we're in right now. Now, if there were an injury on that defensive tackle spot, maybe. I'm also curious, too, this maybe fits back into what we were talking about last segment, players to watch. What the heck happened the last game they played with Phil Mathis? Healthy and active? I thought he'd been playing fine. I thought he'd been a decent run stuffer. Why was he inactive? Does that play into it? I'm curious to see what happens with Mathis tomorrow. What kind of role does he play? That'll be intriguing. Maybe that would play into a John Allen discussion. I mean, Phil Mathis gives you nothing as a pass rusher, and John Allen would give you more there. I don't know. It's an intriguing discussion, something that, you know, as long as this team's in the playoff hunt, going to the playoffs, You know, maybe it's not a bad thing to have an extra defensive tackle in there if you can go into the playoffs with John Allen coming in for 15 snaps off the bench and doing work in certain situations. It wouldn't be bad to have him back, but I'm also not, you know, dying to have him back out on the field. The other guy, and this is the best news of the week for the Commanders, Marshon Lattimore is going to make his debut tomorrow. What do you expect out of Lattimore? I'm curious how much this changes this defense. You know, this is a defense that hasn't been great, but I'm curious how much stuff they haven't been able to do because they don't trust their corners at all. I also don't know how much it changes that. Does one corner change how you feel entirely about this defense? Now, there are a pile of injuries for the Saints, but, you know, say you go against Philly, and you've got A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Well, if you just take out one of those guys with either A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith because you feel good about putting Marshon Lattimore, do you feel like you can still do some of the stuff and be more aggressive when you've got the other guy on the other side still being guarded by maybe Mikey or Benjamin St. Juste? I don't know. I don't know that fully changes things, because if you didn't trust your guys before, does one dude fully trust that? I'm curious to see how this changes their defense. Does it look the same and you've just got a better corner? Or do they become more aggressive and run stuff that maybe they haven't been able to because they couldn't trust their corners? I mean, the reality is they didn't have a number one corner. And by the way, Adam Peters understood that going into the year. It's not like it was negligence. He understood where they were going. There was no problem there. I don't blame him one bit. I wouldn't have been aggressive for a corner in the offseason either. But with what he was able to do to get Lattimore, how does that change things now with who goes to the bench? We just talked about that a little bit earlier. But how does it change what they can do defensively, because now you've got a true number one that you feel like you can put over someone and maybe forget about that side of the field? The other thing that's intriguing for me about Lattimore is he going to be a traveling corner? Is he going to go to both sides of the field to cover your number one? I don't know. There's a potential he could. You know, Dan Quinn talked about that potential. He didn't really want to tip any cards a couple of weeks ago when he was acquired. I don't blame him at all. Is he someone that's going to travel, or is he going to stay on one side? Because, by the way, that goes back to the conversation we had about BSJ. If he's not going to travel with a number one, well, then he's still going to be covering number ones from time to time, if not a lot of the time, because I'd have my number one on his side a lot. So I'm curious to see what they do with the defense with Lattimore. I think it changes some of the dynamic. I think a lot of people think that he's going to have a bigger impact than he might actually have. He's one corner. He's not two corners. He's not three corners. He's elite, by the way. He is elite when he's been on the field. So there's no question that he's going to have an impact. I don't know how much one singular corner has. And that, by the way, he was acquired to help out down the stretch this year, but he's acquired to help out going into next year. And I think getting a head start on next year and understanding the defense and understanding what you're doing and maybe helping out some of these guys down the stretch this year, I think that's really important. Part of the reason you go and get him now, yes, he helps you this season, but the fact that he's already in the building, going to have, you know, half a season, well, more like four games to learn the defense on the field, and then going into next year, you've already got this guy. I think it makes some sense, and I think that's more so why they did it versus just pushing for the playoffs this year, although he is going to play a big factor in that. But I am curious, defensively, does just one addition, Marshon Lattimore, really change the defense? Do we see a totally different unit? You know, does the unit go from, you know, a back half to a middle of the pack sort of defense? Or what are we going to see defensively with Lattimore back in the lineup? Let's take a break. We'll continue talking about the Commanders. I want to take a look at the Week 15 schedule in the NFL. We've got some great games this week. I'm excited about some of those. We'll take a look at some of those games and preview them next here on The Fan.